Stand rock solid, oh you lovers, stand with me. Rise in spirit, oh you lovers, rise in me. Sing together, oh you lovers.
Welcome to Elemental Castings, my twice monthly podcast in which we tour through the different classic elements: air, fire, water, earth, and spirit. Today our subject is spirit, and spirit is about breath, it's about love and sex, it's about all the connective energy that unites us and unites us with the ancestors and the gods and with God herself. Spirit also knits together all the elements and flows through our lives in sometimes surprising and unexpected ways. My name is T. Thorne Coyle, and my guest today is Medusa. Medusa is a witch, priestess, and medium. She's both a reclaiming and fairy-initiated priestess who teaches workshops and has individual students. She works handcrafting spells specific to individuals' needs, and she also hosts seances and gives tarot readings in her seance and divination parlor in Vacaville, California. And the URL for her website is medusasparlor.com. And you can find me at thorncoil.com as usual. So I'd like to start, let us all take a breath together and honor all of the elements that make up our beautiful bodies and our beautiful world. And I'd also like to say, Holy Mother, in whom we live, move, and have our being, from you all things emerge, and unto you all things return. And I feel called today to call upon the gods of the darkening year, the gods of this time moving from Samhain into solstice. Anna and Arthi, walk with us and show us the pathways into mystery, and be with us today in this podcast as we try to bring some light to that which is often hidden in darkness. And I'd like to call my recent beloved dead. Three people important to me died this year: Cora Anderson, Sister Pat Mahoney, and Tara Webster. Please be welcome if you wish to join us. Medusa, is there anyone you'd like to call in?
I'd like to call the beloved dead who are here to help and give guidance.
Be welcome. So, Medusa, have you always been a psychic and a medium? Have you worked with the ancestors since you were young, or was it a later development in your work as a witch?
I've always been drawn to the working with the ancestors and the dead. In fact, I had a student one time say, Medusa, you're really into the dead. And I said, well, yeah, I'm a witch. And he goes, but not all witches are into the dead that way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I don't know. They've always spoken to me, and my teachers that they spoke to, I was really drawn to those teachers, so mm-hmm. I worked with them, learning what they knew about how to work with them and incorporating it. And so as I've moved along in all my practices and learnings, that's always been there.
Mm-hmm. What draws you to that work most, do you think? What's the connection there for you?
I think I can hear them, I can see them, and I'm willing to hear them and see them. Mm-hmm. Our brains, I think, work diligently to help us not see those mm-hmm. things. They keep us sane and upright and moving through the world and able to drive our cars. But when I'm not doing those specific things, I'm willing to see them and know that they're there and listen, because they want to communicate with us. They want to talk with us. They want us to help them, and they want to help us.
What do you see as the relationship then between this realm of the living that we embody and this realm of the dead that is so close to us. You know, these people that were living not so long ago who still want to have communication. Why do you think that's important to us and to them, that kind of relationship? Any ideas on that?
I'm not so sure. Okay, you've caught me with a question. I have no idea.
And that's acceptable, too.
I recently just taught a workshop on how to work with the dead. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I do is like the answering questions, letting people ask me the questions. And I just, it's like, well, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Because I don't always know the answers. And I think that anybody who tries to tell you they know the answers,
right.
Well, really? Because I haven't been, dead that I really remember yet.
Right.
So I have intuition, I have psychic information, and I have to validate that for myself, that I get that that's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know for a fact.
Right. Sometimes when people ask me about my opinions on what happens after death, I say, ask me when I'm dead. Right.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I have theories, but really, who knows? One thing I've found recently, though, is the more adept I get in my magic and in my spiritual practice, the more I really have a strong sense and realization that, like the ancient Greeks said, all the realms are here now, all space and time is here now. And so I have greater access to the gods, to the ancestors, to the fey beings, to the disembodied, right here. You know, my astral temple is around me at all times. I don't have to traverse anymore like I used to. I used to have to go on really long journeys to get places because I was training myself, you know. And now I think that I've established those pathways. It's all here. And so part of my sense with the dead, and particularly for me, the more recent beloved dead, is that the realms are close. And so there's still a strong relationship that we can work with and help establish even more strongly. It is hard to articulate, though. It's just a sense I have that the realms are here. They're not so far away. So why wouldn't we have work together to do?
Right. One of the things I work with and I teach is that the veil between the worlds is just over my left shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
It's just right there.
Mm-hmm.
And all I have to do is lean back,
mm-hmm.
or reach a hand back, or just listen very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I've gotten for me, what seems clear, is that time isn't linear on the other side of the veil, and yet I need it to be. So I struggle with that, and one of the things that I've come up with, or is a construct that helps my brain cope with that thought, is that it's like a spiral. And so when we're reaching through the veil to talk with someone who's passed, we're just turning in that spiral to face the point where they crossed or where they're ready to talk to us from. Sometimes when people have just crossed, it's really hard to get contact with them. I mean, actually, it's like that just crossing, people will have experiences of, oh, my mother came to me like 2 days after she passed. There's something about that in the 3 days, and I think the Tibetans are onto something there. But then there's that space between the 3 days and the year,
mm-hmm.
where it's kind of hard to really get communication from them. And I almost think of it as like they're learning how to be the dead.
Mm.
They're doing something that's really hard to communicate with us at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 years down the road, then it's really easy to turn just a little and get a fix on where they were when they passed or where they want you to know them now.
That's really interesting.
So it for me, it's just a matter of like, you know, we kind of face the right direction and then we can reach through and touch them and talk to them and get to hear from them. One of the things people asked me recently is, do you think that they evolve? And it's like, well, to some degree, yes. But if they've evolved to the point that you wouldn't recognize them, then how do you know it's really them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has to be some part of it that says, oh, well, yeah, this was your mom and she always did this or that or had this energy. That's how we know for us that that's who we're talking to.
Do you have any views on reincarnation that tie into this or not? I know some people do, some people don't.
I think we do. I think we don't. I think, you know, a long time ago I read this weird fictional book and it talked a lot about you get what you really believed.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And I kind of, that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
That seems righteous enough as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do believe that some people move, you know, reincarnate and move on. But at the same time, that's where we come back to the, it's not linear.
Right.
So when I'm reaching through, someone may have passed, been reincarnated, but we're touching that part of them from when they could talk to us after they passed.
Interesting.
If I stuck with just linear, it'd be too limiting to what they experience and give me.
The rational brain loves linear time and space. And as we know, things just don't always work that way. And it kind of freaks out the rational brain sometimes, and we don't know what to make of it. And that's when I just have to take a breath and settle into saying, there's more information here. And what does my body respond to? And what do my emotions tell me about that? The other thing I think about reincarnation, you know, in our tradition, we have this concept of our God soul, and I like to think that our God soul connects with the limitless. It connects with the macrocosm, and that, of course, includes all space and time. And so, of course, it includes the ancestors and our connection to that. And I feel like we're all in kind of this ocean of this macrocosm and this limitlessness. And in that way, not only is there communication, but this concept of reincarnation, we all kind of carry our ancestors with us, you know. We all carry the dead just as we are now walking as the living. And I believe that some of us might reincarnate as whole beings. Others of us, we reincarnate partially as grass and flowers and partially as breath and wind, and partially we go back into this divine soup, you know,
mm-hmm.
where there's all this connection. So there's a great variety there. And I kind of like your idea that some people do, some people don't. It depends on what current they're working
mm-hmm.
in life, you know.
Yeah.
That's an intriguing concept to me. And again, who knows? We'll keep working at it, I guess.
We'll keep working at it.
Yeah. So how about, tell us about your parlor, your Madame Medusa's seance parlor. How did that come about?
About a year and a half ago, I got really clear about the fact that I was ready to start teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so on July the 7th, 2007, I did this ritual for myself and calling to the people who wanted to work with me, who wanted to learn what I've worked on learning. Like I work with Bridget a lot. I work with the Fae a lot. So calling people who want to learn what I've learned about working with them. And as I moved around, I realized that it was like, oh, the dead. You know, and working with those who want to learn what I've learned so far about working with the dead. 2 days later, I was sitting in my garden and suddenly I had this huge epiphany. I could do seances. I could help people speak to the dead because I think I know how to do that. And I hadn't really ever done it before, but I was like, I think I can. I think I know how to do this. And so it's been a process of working with them and listening to them and working on how to do it. And I needed a place, so I went in my house and I created the parlor. I went to my mother's house to get pictures of my ancestors, and I discovered that I had a great aunt who had taken all these pictures of my relatives in their caskets.
Wow.
So I have many pictures of my ancestors in their caskets and their gravesites. So I took pictures that I like, and my husband's, you know, mother and father wedding picture, a picture of my grandmother and her sister, and I got them all framed, and I painted the parlor, and I got some furniture that I thought looked like a seance parlor, and a round table, and so and then I created a permanent circle there.
Mm-hmm.
I cast a circle. Many years ago, I used to have an open door policy for the dead.
Mm-hmm.
They were welcome anytime in my house.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had this, began to be annoying, and I realized, you know, I wouldn't let just anybody walking down the street walk through my house, so I don't have to do that with the random dead. So I set up a sacred space, and I stopped that. And now that I have the parlor, it's a permanent circle of energy within that space that says those who have passed on, ancestors, beloved dead, who are willing to abide by the rules of the circle, which mean they stay in the circle, they don't wander around the house, they are welcome anytime. And I know that they come and they go. And then I also have to go into the room and feed energy to the room. And I leave water and I leave food. And they're there all the time now.
How does your family respond to that?
Well, you know, Mom's been this way for some time. It's just one more thing. One of the stories I tell is that when I first started it, I was looking on, what's it called, Craigslist, mm-hmm. to find some furniture. And I found this cabinet I wanted, and my husband said, we don't actually have that money right at this moment. And I was like, oh, right, okay. Well, I'll wait on that then. So the next day I went out and spent the same amount of money on paint and started painting, and he's like, what part of we don't have that money right at this moment didn't you get? And I said, well, but the paint became the priority, so I'm just prioritizing. And so after we had a conversation, I sat in the room and I said, okay, if y'all want this, I need more money. I actually have to have money to make this space. And that afternoon, he was landscaping the front yard, and he dug up a $20 bill. And I said, okay, good start, but I need more than that. So I put it in the windowsill. And
you put the money in the windowsill?
The $20 mm-hmm. bill, put it in the windowsill. And 2 months later, they gave me a day job making more money.
Excellent.
Yeah. And so now I have a beautiful parlor space in my house, and the kids ignore it or go in it as they need to. And actually, my daughter likes to go in and sit there sometimes, and, you know, she'll actually do tarot readings for friends. We're a pagan family.
Nice. Your kids were raised pagan, right? Because you were already a pagan when they were very small, is that correct?
I came to the craft when they were about 5 and 7 and 5-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as I learned things, I taught them things. And they now consider themselves pagan.
And you're fortunate in that your partner has come merrily along with you.
He comes merrily along. He's not as interested in the pursuit of it as I am, but he likes it. It resonates with him, and he gets it and doesn't have a problem with it. He's just not, you know, we're diverse
mm-hmm.
on this planet. Not everybody is as driven to understand the spiritual and the mysticism as others,
mm-hmm.
which still boggles my mind. I'm like, why don't you? I don't get it. Of course we want to know that.
Yeah, I find it to be the most fascinating thing, too. So while we were preparing for this Medusa, we talked a little bit about the importance of obviously opening up our psychic senses and awarenesses, but also being fully embodied and grounded in this plane. And I'm wondering if you can speak to your journey around developing both of those faculties so that you can do your work.
I had this really good teacher named Thorne Coyle, who was all about embodiment. And so I've done the work of, this is my body. This is, I actually, if I am being reincarnated, if I am on that path, then a part of what I'm doing here is learning how to be human.
Right.
I'm a human being in a body, which means that I have to embrace all of the parts of that. And that's a struggle for many people, you know, like it's easy to say it's a struggle for women, but I know just as many men who struggle with all the issues of what's our body like and what's it look like and is it good enough? And so really doing that work of being in my body and paying attention to it and keeping it healthy has been important. I do the sitting some, you know, sitting and actually, the sitting changed my life. You know, the sitting lets my body give me information, and it is a part of what taught me how to listen. Because listening to my body gave me the ability to do the deeper listening that allows me to listen to the dead,
right,
and to the gods and to the fae. So the more I, and that was what I was teaching the other night. The more I practice listening, the easier it is to hear.
Fancy that.
Yeah.
I find it's also, it seems to be particularly difficult for people who have been mystics or psychics from an early age to want to be fully embodied. Did you find that for yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, you talked about, you know, you noticed me at a stage when I was trying to escape.
Yeah.
And yeah. I, as a young person, I tried to escape through drugs and feed my soul. It's this weird dichotomy between trying to feed yourself and escape at the same time. I always picture it as I have a hungry soul. My soul was born hungrier than what my husband seems to be. And so I have to feed it more and more often. And so there is that sense of, if I could just get to the place where the river flows so strongly, I'd feed all the time, but I don't think I'd really be present in my body.
Right. And we like you present in your body because then you can teach and you can mediate between the realms,
yeah,
right? People who aren't so embodied, I think, have more trouble actually mediating. Because they spend so much of their time in the realms, the sideways realms, the realms of the dead or the fae. Don't you think?
I do. And I've always been clear that, like, I have to, it's almost like I have to have my day job, which is a very grounded job. I make food.
Right.
I feed children. So I have a very grounded day job, which was good, which was essential for having children, you know, to be absent in whatever way, you know, from, you know, mental illness or drug abuse or addiction or deep into mysticism, being absent from your children messes them up.
Yeah.
So it was important for me because being a good parent was the most activism I've ever done. Because now there are two people on the planet who give a shit.
Right.
They care about what's going on. And they care about changing things and making things right and better.
Going back to embodiment and continuing this conversation, I get psychic information and information from the ancestors in different ways. Sometimes I just get downloads, I call them. You know, I just, information just appears in me. and I say, okay, this is what I need to do. Sometimes I do kind of listen and get a sense for what they want, you know, like what kind of offerings they want or what they need at this time to have clearer communication. Other times I really do get a lot of information in my body. The hairs on my arms will stand up, or I'll get an aching at the base of my skull, which tells me something's tapping there, trying to get my psychic attention. I actually have a funny ghost story about that, which if we maybe we'll get to it later. But I'm wondering how information comes through you.
Well, it comes, one, from the listening. I get images. I'm a pretty visual person, so I get a lot of images. But the other thing that I've recently noticed is when I'm doing a seance, I get physical sensations. Mm-hmm. When the first seance I did, I invited a bunch of my friends, and they each invited a dead, and Aunt Winifred did something like the jumping in the body in the movie Ghost. I mean, suddenly Aunt Winifred was making me sit up, and she had some things to say, and I could tell that it wasn't quite me, and I went, whoa, okay, we haven't negotiated that. I'm not... back up. I don't know that it's okay for a random, you know, for dead I don't know to just take over the body. Mm-hmm. It's my body. Mm-hmm. Hence the work on it's my body. I know that now. So I'll listen and try and say what you want me to say, but you don't get to be in there. But what they do now is there's this, I get sensations. Mm-hmm. I get one when they show up. The parlor actually will get very hot.
Interesting.
Instead of the other night, we opened the western gates outside and I could feel the mist and the cold. Mm-hmm. But in my parlor, when they all show up, the room will go up by like 10, 15 degrees. It just gets hot. And I get hot, and I tell people, dress so that you can unlayer. Mm-hmm. Because it gets warm. Mm-hmm. And I can feel the heat of their energy when they want me to speak. Mm-hmm. And then I told you the story, too, of a grandmother who we were trying to talk to. And I got this sensation of, you know, leaning to the side and feeling like I was on tilt. And then I finally was like, did she have a stroke? And they say, yeah. And it's like, okay. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then I had a woman's father, and he wanted us to sit up straight. And he had this head thing that he did, this little tilt to his head that said, I am the man. So it's a combination of visual things and just knowing something and physical sensation and learning to bring it all together and incorporate all that and pass it on. And at the same time, one of the things that's really important for me is owning what's mine. Mm-hmm. I had a friend ask her grandmother about having a baby. And I'm like, you can't ask your grandmother that question through me because I have opinions about that.
Oh, interesting.
I have really, you know my strong opinions about that. So you can't ask her that through me. You have to try some, you know, do something else because mine will get in the way.
So you know when your filter isn't as clean as at other times.
Yeah, and owning it. Mm-hmm. I don't try and pretend like, you know, trying to pretend I own it so that the person I'm talking to, they know it too. Mm-hmm. They get it, and mm-hmm. they can adjust what they're trying to find out and get from their beloved dead.
In general, what do you do to help clear your filters?
You know, give me more.
Well, for example, I find that this is true for a lot of psychics, a lot of mediums, also a lot of people who do transpossession work, drawing down ceremonies, aspecting. Our complexes and our psychology and our emotional wounds can get in the way of the information if we haven't done enough work to try to clean, integrate, and get to know those parts. you know, sometimes information comes through and we think it's this deity speaking, but really we're just annoyed and lecturing our friends, right? We've all been to those rituals, unfortunately. And so for me, it's been really important to do the various cleansings I do and also the various forms of psychological and emotional integration. And just working on self-knowledge helps me. Do you find that's true for you in your work as a medium in general?
It's true for me in my life mm-hmm. in general. I have a lot of self-insight. I always have. And so as soon as I know something, I have to take care of it. And the taking care of it is what keeps me clean and owning it. Like, I have to say out loud some of these things so that if I'm not saying it out loud, it doesn't mean it's not still there.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm doing all my personal work. I'm taking care of my own stuff and going back to being honest with my clients, with my people, saying, no, that's mine. Mm-hmm. And I have a hard time getting around what's mine to get to what you want them to tell you. So I can't guarantee that that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mostly it's with people I know very well.
Sure.
You know, with people I don't know very well, I have none of that going on. I don't have an opinion about how you were with your mother or whether you should have kids or get another job or any of that because I don't know you.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's easier to be a medium for folks who are further away from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, I think.
That makes sense.
It's like I can't do tarot readings for myself very well.
Right.
It's best if I go to somebody else. And so working with the dead with my friends helps me develop skills, but doesn't always, you know, necessarily translate to they are not getting some of my stuff. But they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to me knowing they know that.
The physical information is really interesting to me because I find that it helps me, it gives me a gauge for something is actually happening. I'm not just making stuff up.
Yes.
When I get a physical sensation, it's more likely that it's actually occurring because I've got something. Well, as I said, a measure, you know, that, oh, yes, I can test this. It's not just wish fulfillment or it's not just my brain making something up. I have some confirmation from a different part of me. For example, so I want to go back to my funny ghost story. Well, it's funny now. It was terrifying at the time. About a year ago, I was having a dream where something was looming over me and about to fall on me, this large gray shadowy figure, and I was screaming in my dream, but no sound was coming out. It was one of those terrifying dreams, and I woke myself up because I was making noise. And at first I thought, oh, I was dreaming, and then I thought, oh, wait, something is here. And the reason I knew something was there was the base of my skull was aching really, really badly, which generally, as I said, if I get some sense in the base of my skull, I know something's trying to communicate with me, something's trying to come through. And the spirit, I could tell, was confused, and I woke up enough to talk to it, and I was like, what do you want? You need to go towards the light, you know, walk towards the light, Carol Ann, right? And so it bumped my aura, and I said, oh, not that light. Look. I've kind of opened my senses enough and said, oh, no, look, there's a door over there. There was a little door of light, and I pointed them to it, and they went on their merry way. But I thought, oh, that's so funny. The poor things. Here I am. Since I'm asleep, I wasn't toning down my aura, and my aura these days tends to be pretty bright. And they're just like, hey, there's this globe of light over here. That must be where we need to go, I guess.
Yeah.
It was so funny, though, when they bumped my aura, and I was like, no, no, no.
I am not the light.
And then it made sense. It's like, no wonder all my alarm systems were going off because there was this ghost bumping my aura trying to enter.
Right.
Because it was very confused. So that was just a case where the physical sensations I was having woke me up enough to tell me what needed to happen so that I could help this spirit.
Right.
Whereas if I hadn't had the physical sensations, I would have just chalked it up to some bad dream and, you
right.
know, what I'd eaten for dinner or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's been a process of learning in the absence of when I was working with a beloved dead, and I kept having this pain in my chest,
mm-hmm.
and was like, "Well, is this? Am I having a heart attack, or did they have a heart attack? Which one of us here is in this kind of pain?" And just kind of continuing to work with them, and then when they were gone, when I said, "Okay, we're done," then that pain completely went away, and I was like, "Oh. Yeah, that wasn't me. That was them."
Mm-hmm.
And so over time of practicing acknowledging when it's gone, then I can acknowledge when it is.
Right.
So it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm practicing learning, you know, to notice when it is. And you're right. Yeah, it's validation can happen. And I encourage clients or people to get validation from other sources besides me.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I've given you some information and you're struggling with it and you don't want to integrate it, then see if it shows up somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And if it shows up in other sources or from other tarot readers or whatever, then it's valid. But I'll give, you know, I own sometimes I say things and they're not right for you. Maybe they are right for you, but maybe not now, maybe 10 years from now. Who knows? But look for validation. It's always good to look for validation.
I've even found in my practice, I think outside confirmation is really good, although I think people can also get addicted to that sometimes, you know,
well, yeah.
wanting that all the time. And what I've been training myself in is, you know, those first impulses that we often ignore?
Yeah.
I train myself to listen to them and follow them and then see what happens. So I've able to get confirmation from following those first impulses, and then that trains my intuition better.
Right.
Right? Because it's like, oh, I followed that first impulse. It turned out to be correct.
Right.
And therefore, I'm going to follow that first impulse more often. So I'm listening to my own spirit on a more regular basis, which is helpful to me.
Uh-huh.
And that's such basic work. But our culture trains us out of it. We're trained to ignore that intuition and to just go running about our day. And so we never get to the listening you've been talking about.
It's really a hard practice,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that you said our culture doesn't encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
And so and our culture provides us with so many distractions from it.
Right.
There are so many ways to distract ourselves from doing that kind of listening that it takes a discipline for me,
mm-hmm.
to keep showing up for myself to say, okay, I'm practicing listening. I'm practicing listening. I also, back to doing my personal work, every few years or so, I will go to all my friends and say, okay, if there was one thing you wish I got, what would it be? Like, you see me struggling with it, and you know, if one thing you could say, wave your magic wand and Medusa wouldn't do that anymore, what would it be? And I had a friend 2 years ago say, that you're psychic. Stop fighting it. Just embrace it. Be psychic. And I was like, oh, right.
What's so beautiful about that is this is after years and years of work and years of being psychic and teaching and training.
Exactly.
And you still were struggling with it. So what in you was struggling, do you think?
To me, it's a deep core cultural, if I actually know that, then they'll really know I'm certifiable.
Right.
That I'm really tilted, that I'm really not right, that I, you know, I'm, and who am I to say, oh, yes, I know this psychic information? It's just, it's all that stuff. It's mm-hmm. years of having to overcome enculturation.
Yeah.
As a person, as a woman, all that stuff. Practicing not being less than, practicing mm-hmm. being all of who I am.
Right.
And not denying the parts of me that don't fit.
Mm-hmm. I find that, it's so important to hear that coming from you, from a woman who is very psychic, who works with the dead, who has a seance parlor, who's been training for years and years, that you've gone through that struggle just, you know, in recent years, because so many people show up to study who insist they're not psychic, who are psychic over and over again, and I show them, I point it out to them. It's like, no, this, that, you just don't get information in this way you think you should. So how do we get information? Some people hear things physically. Some people hear things with their psychic ears. Other people get scents or sensations or colors or see things with their non-physical eyes. There's such a wide range, and we're trained to not trust that information.
Well, and the other part is, for me, it doesn't look like it does in the movies.
Well, yes.
I mean, for me, a big part of, you know, it's like, this is psychic information. Well, but it doesn't look like it looked in that movie or on that television show. So, and it's my intellectual brain knows better, and yet I can't help but revert to that every now and then, going, it doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like that person's. And so to me, that's a big part of the fairy work
mm-hmm.
in being a fairy practitioner, is really owning and practicing owning that that is exactly right for me.
Right.
That is exactly what it's supposed to look like for me. And then it isn't going to look like the TV or that psychic or that psychic, but this is how it looks on Medusa.
Mm-hmm. Most of the ways we get information doesn't make for good television. It just looks like we're sitting around.
Exactly.
Yeah. The lightning isn't crackling from my fingertips, so I must not be doing it right. Damn.
Oh, but if it could.
If it only could. Yeah.
I would change the world.
That's right. So I want to tell our listeners what just happened. Our fabulous tech, Winter, told us we had to stop because things had just frozen and he lost some time. And I had to laugh because I'd been talking about listening to that first intuitive impression, and I had gotten an intuitive impression that some of the dead were swirling around our studio room and they wanted some space to either be talked directly about or maybe have some space for them to speak. But the conversation was rolling and so interesting, I just let the conversation go. And then, well, this happened. And we're learning rapidly with these podcasts that when we don't listen strongly enough to spirit, they mess with the computers. So I want to leave some space to see if we can tune in and see if anything wants to speak or if there's any messages that want to come through before we end up closing today. So let's all just take a breath together wherever we are and just tune into our bodies for a moment and just tune into the space just behind our heads and our shoulder blades, and just notice what might be gathering wherever we are listening to this right now. And just breathe, and let's try to be open. And I just want to relate that right now I'm doing this piece of work, getting a feeling in my breastbone of openness and lightness, and just a sense of well-being, which is nice.
I experience it as opening my wingspan.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I have wings, mm-hmm. that are opening up. And for me, that message is it's okay to be as big and bright and shiny as I need to be.
Mm-hmm. I often have those wings, those energetic wings. And for me, the reminder is to keep my heart open to my own life and to this work, that when that starts to shut down, all my sources of information shut down. I'm just noticing the spirits that are here. I'm not getting a direct message of that wants to be vocalized through me this moment. Are you, Medusa?
I think the message that I'd have to convey is the thing that came a while ago when we were in break, and that is the dead need us to cry.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it's important to them
mm-hmm.
that we shed tears,
mm-hmm.
that we grieve. I see it as our tears create the river that is the River Styx. In our culture, it's not okay to show displays of grieving or to grieve very long. We're supposed to be over it and back at our jobs in 3 days.
Right.
Our beloved has passed and our life will never be the same, and we're supposed to be over it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to try and, if we're going to create a new culture, a culture in which we get to grieve the dead. We get to grieve our loss and let them pass through our grieving and let them move on through whatever they need to move on through.
Life does continue, but it doesn't have to continue at the breakneck pace most of us live at. And I just found this recently. You know, I have lost 3 very important people in the last 6 months, all 3 of whom I was with at least on the day they died, singing their souls over. So Cora Anderson, I was there singing with her the day she died. My friend, Sister Pat, from the soup kitchen I work at, I was there singing for her when we took her off life support. That was just 2 months ago. And then just a week ago, a very important priestess, Tara Webster, died as I was there singing. And when I tried to go to my regularly scheduled class the weekend after, it was really too much for me. I had reached my limit because I had not allowed space for those deaths to move through me fully enough. And it was really hard for me to teach that weekend. And I really reached my limits enough that I just had to crawl into bed,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I want to acknowledge what you're saying, that it's not only important for the dead, it's key for the living
yeah.
to have that space. Our psyches and our emotions just can't handle it if there's not space. You know, and I talk so much in my practice about making space for our emotions and breathing and expanding, you know, my energy bodies to have greater capacity. Yet when it comes to fully giving myself enough space to grieve these important teachers, I still couldn't quite give myself enough.
Yeah. And really, there's nothing like grief to take us out of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Grief physically makes our brain shut down. So it doesn't function at the level that it used to function. And it's really hard to be in our bodies when we're grieving. And so, yeah, all the work we do to be embodied and fully in our body, grieving allows us to get back in our bodies to do that and to let our brains clear out of the chemicals that it naturally creates when we are grieving, when we're at a loss.
So allowing the grief to flow through us brings us back home,
mm-hmm.
whereas not allowing the grief to flow through us keeps us splintered and cut off. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Yeah. The memorial for Tara was yesterday, and it was so good that there were moments in it to laugh, but there were also moments in it where everyone was crying.
Mm-hmm.
Something broke through, and that felt so powerful for me to be able to sit and cry in a room full of people who loved her so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very potent. And I really like your image of that as forming the river that the souls travel on.
Yeah. Yeah, I it's an image that came to me back when all the people had died in the earthquake,
mm-hmm.
the Loma Prieta.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for us to hold the grief of a large number of people passing. And those are the people who need, you know, yes, they do have their people grieving, but it does affect all of us. It is a disturbance in the force, Luke, when a lot of people pass at the same time. And it is hard for them to be grieved because there are so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, especially in small, where the tidal wave wiped out whole families.
Right.
How do whole families get grieved when the whole family is gone?
Gone.
So I think it's important that we hold that and we try and help in that process. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I'm aware of it.
I'm just thinking of all the old cultures where grieving was ritualized, you know. Some of them even going as far as to have professional mourners who would wail properly, you know, so that the energy moved in a certain way, you know,
mm-hmm.
and really having space to grieve, to wail, to keen, you know, the keening and that heart-wrenching sound that arises from the human soul when it's in that much pain was acceptable. It's not acceptable for us.
When my grandmother passed, it was so devastating. And I cried and cried at the funeral. And she was Southern Baptist. And the minister said, you know, she's gone to a better place. And I didn't say it to him, but I wasn't crying for her. I was crying for me.
Right.
Because there was not going to be anyone on this planet who loved me so completely unconditionally as she did.
Mm-hmm.
No one. I have people who love me deeply and dearly and in different ways, but not from the moment I was born, having that person who loved me so intensely and so unconditionally to be gone from my life. I was crying for me.
Mm-hmm.
And not having that anymore.
Right.
And you won't have those teachers anymore.
That's right.
And it's important to feel that loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's being human, embodied.
The other thing I'm opening to is, yes, all three of these women taught me things in life and had friendship with me in life. And I'm really beginning to sink into the lessons they're teaching me in their death. You know, what's their legacy and what do I learn from that? What did they teach me even in the moments of their dying when I was with them? And what are the lessons I can learn from that? And those lessons are myriad. And I really want to allow myself space to open to that too, which is another thing our culture doesn't do. We think about the lessons in birth and talk about all the changes we're going to go through when there's this new life. But what about the changes we're going to go through when this life has shifted in a way that is barely recognizable anymore and into death, this incredible mystery? What's that teaching?
Mm-hmm. I had a mother who had lost a son, and she said, it confused me when the sun came up. She couldn't comprehend, how can the sun actually come up?
Mm-hmm.
My life is no longer the same. Loss is huge. And it's important that I just want to help create space for people to be there for each other in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the getting to talk about it. Again, death is taboo. And we don't get to talk about them after they've passed. We don't get to talk about them to the people who love them so much. And that's what they want more than anything. They want to keep talking about that person. But everybody's afraid to because we don't want to offend them.
Right.
There's so much in death that is such a part of our life. And I don't understand why we've started pretending that it's not.
I think that it's fear because we can't really know what happens. But if we open to it, it opens up deeper and deeper wells of compassion in us. And that helps all the realms. That helps the living. It helps us, our relationship with the plants, with the animals, with our beloved living friends and family. And I really think that compassion spills over into all the realms seen and unseen. And right now the world needs as much compassion as we can muster. The world is in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this grief that cracks our hearts open a little bit and opens that water, that flow, opens us to that river also of compassion that can flow out from us and affect everything we end up touching.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's a great lesson from death. I want to thank our beloved dead. I want to thank you, Tara Webster, and you, Sister Pat Mahoney, and you, Cora Anderson, and yes, you too, Victor, even though you didn't die this year. You're always with me. And all of my ancestors.
And all of those who have come to give me guidance and give us guidance as we do this work.
And I'd like to thank Anna and Arthi, who help open the mystery of the unknown, that dark, winding path. May we learn how to walk it with firm feet and a beautiful, open, sometimes breaking heart. And may we all again breathe together and feel the blessing that is life here in the midst of this talk of death and transition. And may the mystery continue to unfold. Thank you for joining us here at Elemental Castings. Again, I'm T. Thorne Coyle, thornecoyle.com, and I'm with priestess and medium Medusa, medusasparlor.com. And may your life be blessed, and may your life be a blessing, and may your ancestors know they are loved and treasured and honored. Even those difficult ones need to be honored, for they've all given us some kind of gift. Holy Mother, in whom we live, move, and have our being, from you all things emerge, and unto you all things return. Blessed be.
Stand rock solid, oh you lovers, stand with me.